Thanks for taking the time to download this BBC Radio 5 Live podcast. To find other programmes you might be interested in, click bbc.co.uk/5live, where you'll also find our terms of use.
Good morning and welcome. This is Wake Up to Money with Mickey Clark and Andy Verity on BBC Radio 5 Live and Radio Ulster. Coming up in the next half hour this morning, as anti-austerity demonstrations in Spain turn ugly with police firing rubber bullets at protesters. Greece is set to be ground to a halt by a national 24-hour strike.
Here, England and Wales could be hit by industrial action today as teachers protest against their workload, pay and pensions.
And the British Bankers Association prepares to give up its role setting that crucial rate of lending between banks that caused such trouble for Barclays and others, LIBOR.
You're listening to Wake Up to Money, a podcast from BBC Radio 5 Live. For more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Much of Greece is set to come to a standstill today as workers stage a national 24-hour strike. It's the first major anti-austerity action since a coalition government took power in June. Flights are expected to be grounded, local transport disrupted, and public sector offices shut. The walkouts have been called by the country's two biggest unions, representing half the workforce.
The country wants its lenders to grant it two more years to push through austerity cuts at a cost of 15 billion euros to give it its recession-hit economy time to recover. Greece is also trying to qualify for the next instalment of its 130 billion euro bailout. Its neighbours, however, are reluctant to stump up more money unless belt-tightening demands are met.
We're joined this morning by Vasilis Zanakis, who's the Secretary for International Affairs at the ADEDY Union, which is the main public sector union which has called the strike, and Konstantin Mikolos, who's President of the Athens Chamber of Commerce and Industry. Good morning to you, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Can I ask you, Vasilis, first of all, tell us why this strike has been called and what you hope to achieve from it?
Oh, after 2.5 years now, we're living in deep austerity measures. So now, once again, the government comes and announces new measures. And all these new measures is going to affect, once again, employees and workers. So when you have a frozen economy and when you ask growth, you cannot ask once again from the people to pay all this money. So everybody knows now that after two packages of austerity measures, and when they destroy all the social state which was built for many decades in the country, and when there is no social dialogue, and when we have lost all our fundamental labor rights, so the answer is only one, once again, from the two main confederation, as you said, to say no more austerity measures, since until now we're living in a recession, and we haven't seen until now growth in the country.
Just help us out with a little bit of detail. I mean, give us an idea, for example, about the real wage cuts that members of your unions have gone through as a result of austerity.
Well, I can say that they are in two levels. The first one is from the people who was working for many years, so the cuts are more than 30%. So, and the second package is level is that for all the new people, for the new school teachers, for example, you can see that their wages are on 700 and 800 euros per month. So if a family or a new family can live in and also at the same time you have unemployment people in your family, so if anybody can believe that they can live with this amount, so it's incredible. So at the same time there are cuts in the pensions, the same time is there are cuts in any additional amount we have from our additional funds. So the situation is it's unbelievable how we can stand more in this situation.
Okay, well, let's hear from Konstantin Mikolos, who represents his business in Greece. What's your view on what's being said there?
Well, there's not a lot that I can
can disagree with. We've had deep austerity measures that have been implemented over the last 2.5 years. The necessary structural reforms heading towards the growth of the economy were not there to be seen. We've got a question of the sustainability of the actual debt when we've got 166% of debt against GDP. Under any economic theory, it is unsustainable. So we have to seriously look at what are the issues that need to be followed on.
So would you protest towards Germany for imposing further austerity and sympathise with the strikers?
Well, it's not a question of sympathising with the strikers. It's a question of whether we can live, or a large portion of the Greek population can live, with a salary which is near the European Union poverty line. Because this is essentially what we're talking at the moment. We've had the first knock-off, which is 23% as far as the pensions are concerned. There was almost 27% as far as the low wages were concerned. And that in itself creates a vicious circle, in the sense that these people are put literally out of the market, and therefore there's less demand for the market and less consumption from the production of Greek companies. So
okay.
We're living through a vicious circle at the moment. What we need is we need to enhance growth, we need to stimulate the economy, and this is what we're expecting to see out of this final, as the government says, package that is going to be implemented here in Greece.
I'm quite surprised to hear you both agreeing, but Vasilis, I've got to ask you, I mean, the government is in a very difficult position here. If it caves to your demands, it simply won't get the money it needs to keep going.
Yes, but they are elected promising to the people that they would change this policy, and they wouldn't continue this the old models they implement until now from the previous two governments. So the new government said, okay, we will find the money to pay back our loans, but not by cutting wages and pensions. And that is that we are seeing now. So after Thessaloniki, when we organized a big demonstration there, so we continued and we started there with I don't want to use the word network, but contacts with other colleagues from other Mediterranean countries. So we started contacts with them, and so our colleagues from Italy participated there.
Well,
and tomorrow, and the 28th of September, we'll be in Rome to demonstrate with our colleagues, together with our colleagues.
Okay, well, you mentioned that, Vasilis. I want you to listen to this clip, because this is what happened at the demonstrations in Spain. Now, there was violence there and police firing rubber bullets. If you're taking coordinated action across Mediterranean countries, Italy, Spain, Greece, isn't there a risk of disorder across the Eurozone here?
Let me say once again that we always, every time we demonstrate or we strike in a peaceful way, and we try to protect our demonstration.
Okay, I want to ask Constantine about that.
We don't want to use any violence. We don't want to use any violence against anybody.
That's reassuring to hear. But Constantine Mikolos, are you reassured by that?
Well, as far as the AVV and the private workers union is concerned, I will agree with the speaker. They always try to safeguard their protests and their demonstrations. Unfortunately, we've got other anarchy elements, splinter groups that usually enter these demonstrations, these mass demonstrations, and we have the usual problems that we've seen in the past. We do hope that this general strike will be very well organized, it will be protected, the police will carry out its work as it should, so that we can avoid both damages and, of course, immaterial damages, in the sense that these pictures will be portrayed abroad and will create further sort of disillusions as far as Greece is concerned.
Thank you very much. Thank you to you both. Constantine Mikolos there from the Athens Chamber of Commerce and Industry. And we also heard from Vasilis Zanakis from the ADEDY Union.
Let's have a look at this morning's business pages in the markets with Julian Chillingworth. He's Chief Investment Officer at Rathbones Unit Trust Managers. Morning, Julian.
Good morning, Mickey.
Let's start with the FT. Catalan vote piles pressure on Madrid. I mean, this is what Andy's just been talking about. These anti-austerity protests turn violent last night. And the point is that, you know, these negotiations over the crisis in the Eurozone have dragged on and on and on. And it's getting to the stage now where the electorate's saying enough is enough.
Yes, I mean, I think that the points that were made in that clip are very relevant for Spain as well. You've got unemployment amongst the under-30s running well in excess of 40%. And, you know, it's no surprise that people are anti-further austerity packages. And
Are they right, though, Julian? Do you believe from a city perspective that the city wants austerity, or does it want a relaxation of austerity and an attempt to stimulate growth?
I think that the city is coming to the conclusion that you need some growth within these economies to cure these problems. I mean, we've had this debate in the UK as well, and if you impose more austerity on austerity, you will get undoubtedly people out on the streets rioting and protesting.
There was one ray of hope for our own economy, which was the car industry, until we heard that Ford is going to lay off hundreds of workers, which is reported in The Independent.
Yes, I mean, the car industry across the whole of Europe seeing a slowdown. I mean, it's no surprise that Ford is not immune from that. And unfortunately, again, I suspect that they've modernised Dagenham and Southampton, but there's probably more in terms of labour modernisation to come through there. So I think they also use this as an excuse to slim the labour force.
And just quickly, the Telegraph says banks are as risky as before the crisis. That warning comes from the IMF.
Yeah, I mean, I think no surprises here. The banks haven't delevered as much as people have expected them to, and they need to get on and do that and take some of the pain, particularly across Europe. German banks are a good example of that.
Now, in the markets, the FTSE spent most of the day in the red. It's become a bit like flotsam in a sea of turmoil.
That's very poetic, Mickey.
I thought so, yeah. I wondered if he was going to be impressed. But the it ended the day up 21 at 5,860, mainly on the back of some better-than-expected economic news in the US. But the Dow, on the other hand, that was down 101 at 13,458. And a short time ago in Tokyo, there's a knock-on effect there. The Nikkei is down 160 at 8,931. On the currency markets, the pound's higher against the US dollar at $1.62, but it's lower against the euro at €1.25. The point I'm trying to make, Julian, is the financial markets are just grasping every bit of news they can. And as soon as it turns bad, they go down, and when it's good, they go up.
Yes, I mean, you've got to bear in mind, we've had a period of 3 or 4 weeks of very positive news for the markets, with monetary packages coming from the Fed, from the Europeans and from the Japanese. And so it's no surprise if there's a bit of a pause here. And undoubtedly, people are now going to concentrate on earnings and company earnings. And Caterpillar, yes, overnight on Monday night came out with a profits warning, and that set the scene. And despite a bit of better economic growth in the States, I think that people are going to be looking at numbers from companies which I suspect in the upcoming 3 weeks aren't going to be that good.
OK, Julian, we'll leave it there. Many thanks to that. Julian Chillingworth there from Rathbones Unit Trust Managers.
This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
The British Bankers Association has agreed to be stripped of its responsibility for setting the crucial interest rate that's supposed to represent the cost of lending between banks, but often hasn't. Yep, we're talking about the London Interbank Offered Rate, or LIBOR, which Barclays was fined £290 million for rigging. That comes ahead of a report into LIBOR by Martin Wheatley, the man who's about to take charge of the new financial regulator, the Financial Conduct Authority, with several other banks also under investigation. Douglas Keenan knows about this. He's a former Morgan Stanley trader, and he's previously called for an overhaul of how the rate is set. Good morning, Douglas.
Good morning.
Just remind us about the sorts of things that have gone wrong as a result of the informal method of setting LIBOR under the British Bankers Association.
Banks misreport the rates. So they manipulate the official rate to be wherever they want it to be, and that allows them to gain some extra profits.
And how do they manipulate it? There was talk, I think, of bottles of Bollinger when the scandal broke over the weekend, but sometimes a trader would call up the person responsible for reporting the rate.
That would seem to have be happening. I have witnessed things like this going right back to 1991 when I first started trading, and what would happen is I could see the actual rates that were being traded on my live trading screens, and then I'd compare those with where the LIBOR, the official LIBOR rates were being reported, and there would sometimes be significant differences. The way it works is the British Bankers Association phones up banks and just says, where is LIBOR? And the banks can basically report anything they like.
And too often it seems that what they reported was influenced by the opportunity for them as a bank to make profit. But do you believe that
Absolutely.
The traders, do you believe the traders individually manipulated it for their own gain?
Because I was not working at one of the LIBOR setting banks, it's hard for me to know what their motivations were going on inside the bank.
Yeah, interesting. But it, clearly this informal way of setting it has not been good. And now it seems that they're proposing to put it on a basis where it's based on actual transactions that have taken place.
Right, and that's definitely an improvement. That's the way it should be.
But isn't it going to be difficult to regulate an industry that's worldwide? I mean, the British Bankers Association has ceded or been sacked from the job. The government's taken it over. But if it's American banks, Japanese banks, Chinese banks, it's going to make it very difficult to keep an eye on things.
Well, there is an interbank market, and there's a sort of some banks are officially members of that interbank market, and where they are buying and selling or making offers to buy and sell, those rates or those prices are on live screens. So you can just look at the screens, and it I think that should work fairly well.
But what I'm saying is if one bank in London is trading with another bank in New York and they're doing something wrong, who wraps them across the knuckles?
Oh, I see. Who's the regulator?
Yeah.
That's an excellent point. The thing is, though, if those banks are operating in the London market, then they would be subject to London regulation.
It's interesting because although it's the London interbank offered rate, a lot of the dodgy trading that went on around LIBOR took place in New York, didn't it?
Or in dollars, yeah, in dollars as well. That's true. But they're still operating out of out of London. Entities, business entities.
But as you said, you've seen this for going back to 1991. I mean, that's 20 years. The regulators were only onto it from about 2006. Is this sort of manipulation now so built into Wall Street and the city that this won't necessarily stop it? Or do you think that...
I think that's an excellent question. And in fact, in 1991, it was even worse because the Bank of England was colluding with British banks to do market manipulation.
How do you mean?
Well, they would the Bank of England, for example, before they would announce a change in interest rates in the base rates, they would notify British banks and tell them, and that way British banks would go into the market. And they could take advantage because they would know that there was about to be a change in interest rate.
Oh, I see. So again, an opportunity to game the system from
exactly.
the fact that it's done so informally.
Right. And the Bank of England was actively supporting this. So I think that was in 1991. So I entirely agree with what you're saying, is that the corruption is really, it's pervasive.
Well, we don't have the Bank of England to answer that point, but thanks very much for coming on to make those points. That's Douglas Keenan, former Morgan Stanley trader.
A sad story now for many of us. Over one-third of the nation's pubs and bars could be at risk of failure in the next 12 months. That's according to research out today by the trade body for insolvency professionals, R3. It says the continued squeeze on wages is heaping pressure on an already hard-pressed sector, struggling against competition from supermarkets supplying cheaper alcohol. Let's talk now to Alan Hudson. He's an R3 council member and he's also a partner at Ernst & Young. Hello, Alan.
Morning, Mickey.
So, difficult times for the pub industry. I mean, most of the pubs complain it's our tax rates, but you're saying that it's not, it's the squeeze on public spending.
I think it comes down to a lot of things with the consumer. You've got choices to how you spend your money. When you've got, you know, mortgage to meet, rent to meet, and utility bills going up, you can't happily go out and buy beer every night of the week as you may have done a few years ago.
I mean, your report suggests that it's pubs and clubs in London and the southeast that are among the worst hit areas. Why would that be geographically?
There's an element of concentration in terms of where people live, and probably oversupply from the boom years, if you like, in the lead up to the downturn. And also for some of those sites, they're better deployed. These days, you look at your local area, they may have been turned into a Starbucks or a Tesco's Metro. They're valuable more as those sites than they are as pubs.
Isn't it just a bad business model we've got now, though? I mean, the brewers controlled the industry years ago. Now it's these property companies that call themselves pubcos. But, you know, everything is ratcheted up and geared. They're heavily in debt. They're putting pressure on the tenants. And the tenants are getting hit by this spending downturn.
It's certainly a bit of a double whammy as a hard-working pub operator. You know, you're trying to stay relevant. You're having to invest in the site, you know, potentially move from just selling beer to try and make it more of a restaurant, appeal to families. And that's really hard if you haven't got spare cash and all the cash you're generating is going to service your debt.
What about this minimum price that they're bringing in for alcohol? I mean, the supermarkets seem to be shrugging it off, but it must impact on the industry generally, mustn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a bit of a change in habits here where people are, you know, more comfortable buying from the supermarket, drinking at home. I think the industry used to be far more promotion-led at the pubs, and now it's more about the offer. As I said earlier, you know, have you moved away from being just a beer seller to a family location, someone wants to get out and eat, and therefore you're more attractive? You're not comparing it with just sort of drinking your bottle of cider at home at night.
Well, I take the view that the pubs around our villages, you use them or lose them, but even I can't drink that much. So anyway, we'll see. Alan, many good to talk to you. Alan Hudson there from R3 and a partner in Ernst & Young.
Maybe there's not enough time to go to the pub because people are working too long hours. Teachers think they're working too long hours anyway. Children's after-school activities and lunchtime supervision could be hit as members of one of the biggest unions, NASUT, plan to start working their contracted hours only. The teachers say the education system relies on them doing many hours of unpaid overtime in evenings and on weekends. Would you make the same complaint about your job, or is it just something you accept with it? Today, the workplace charity Working Links has organised Go Home on Time Day. Steve Bevan is director of the think tank, the Work Foundation. It would be chaotic if everyone went home on time, wouldn't it, Steve?
I think there'd be a lot of shockwaves through lots of firms and lots of organisations if people did. I think the last estimate I saw is that something like £28.8 billion worth of unpaid overtime is worked in the UK economy. And put that in perspective, Sydney's absence is about 12 to 13 billion.
Well, it's not just overtime that the teachers are annoyed about. They're also annoyed about pensions and their pay. But what do you think about teachers? Because I know the hard-working, conscientious ones do work way into the evening and through weekends. Are they unfairly subsidising the education system, or should they accept it as a salaried employee? That's what they have to do.
Well, I think it's, you know, it's the same with most professions and people in vocations, if you like. You know, there's a heavy reliance on people's commitment to their organisation, to their profession and to their clients, in this case, you know, kids and so on. But you see the same in the NHS and across the public sector. I guess it's just one of those, you know, facts of life, unfortunately. I mean, if you remember, a few years ago, we had a thing called the workforce remodelling exercise in education, which led to the recruitment of lots and lots of learning assistants. And the role that they were supposed to be performing was to take some of the more mundane and routine tasks
away
from teachers.
But times are tough, and, you know, there are going to be people listening to this who say, well, they're lucky to have jobs and pensions and get paid.
Absolutely. No, I understand that. And I think it's certainly been clear over the last few years during the recession that people who do have jobs have felt under either explicit or implicit pressure to work longer hours. And for those people in industries where job insecurity is increased, it's I guess, quite natural that people are a bit wary and therefore working longer hours to get more done with fewer people.
It's very much a story of different story for different industries, isn't it? The car industry, you still get extra money for overtime, but that's quite a rare thing these days, isn't it?
Yeah, it's much less likely to get, shift premier and so on. But as we heard earlier, when you were talking about Ford, technology has made an impact on productivity, and therefore you end up with more displacement between technology and labour.
Thanks very much. Steve Bevan there, director at the think tank, the Work Foundation. Thanks very much for all your texts this morning. Sorry we didn't have time to read them out, but that's it from Wake Up to Money for this morning. Mickey and I back in 5 Live Breakfast, just coming up in a few seconds.
Five Lives Wake Up to Money podcast. Delivered to your computer every weekday. For more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.